This is a production of Cornell University.
So with that, I think we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. I get to bang my first time at the gavel here, but they put my name on so nicely. Thank you to the Office of the Assembly for that lovely treat.
You didn't bang it.
I was gentle. Now I'll bang it. It was a gentle banging. Very excited to have everyone here in person. I think we're going to go ahead and start off. I'll let Casey do a roll call for us, and then we'll go ahead and jump right in.
There's some pockets over there, and I'm reading pockets. I apologize if I butcher anyone's name. Please correct me so I don't trigger in the future. Emily, Amelia?
Here. And it's Amelie.
Amelie? Okay. Thank you. Apologies. Brandon Fortenberry?
Here.
Caroline Levine? David Heiner?
Here.
Deborah Howell? Duncan Caddy?
Here. I'm here.
Perfect. Duncan Caddy?
Yeah, it's Katie.
Thank you.
No problem.
Eve DeRosa? Ian Akisoglu?
Present. It's Akisholo.
Akisholo. Thank you. Jacob Byte?
Here.
James Richards? Jessica Withers?
Here.
Leslie GK?
Here, and it's Zakay.
Zakay. Manaya Lewis? Marcy Benda?
Here.
Nicola Dana?
Here.
Preston Haney? Ham? Richard Benzel?
Here.
And Stephanie Tanis?
Here.
Thomas Fox?
Here. Blake?
Valerie Amer?
Here.
And if I didn't call your name, let me know, so I think that would be all.
Thank you very much, Casey. I would like to start off with a land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homeland of the Gayagona of the Puyuga Nation. The Gayagona are members of the Anishinaabe Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayagona dispossession and honoring the ongoing connection of Gayagona people, past, present, to these lands and waters. So welcome everyone to the first session of the University Assembly. I'm very honored to be your chair for this upcoming session. Hopefully everyone got a chance to see the packet and review items. We have copies up front if you're here in person and didn't get one of those. I would just like to start with a sort of a brief message about items and goals and expectations for this upcoming session to talk a little bit about how I plan to approach it. So one of the things that I want to speak to, as I said in my welcome message, is that we share a common mission and we're all in this together. That we are all coming from different areas. We may disagree with each other at times. We may have conversations that are challenging, but ultimately that we have a mission and goal, and our diverse backgrounds and experiences that we bring to this conversation are what really are the strengths of the assemblies and specifically the university assembly. I'm very excited to be a chair for this organization and welcome you all to engage with me with questions, comments, feedback, things that I can do to help foster a creative and effective environment for everyone. And I encourage you all to do the same with each other. I wanted to speak briefly to resolutions because it's such a major part of what we do in the resolutions, and I want to speak to sort of the expectations and goals that I have. I spoke to a little bit when I ran for the position, but I hope to be able to support resolutions. I hope to be able to support all of you in designing resolutions that are sought to be brought to the UA through my university knowledge. I've worked here for almost 16 years, and I have an extensive knowledge of of leadership within the university at large, and oftentimes as a shining example, we couldn't get in the door. I know the person to contact to get in the door, something as simple as that. You know, when you're looking to ask that question about that process, that procedure, I've been here for a long time and have a lot of knowledge, and I want to support everyone in that. And encourage you all to, as you bring resolutions forward, to engage with the constituent groups and the people who are impacted by it that may need to make change. Because asking those questions in advance can greatly impact and improve the opportunity for that resolution to see, be able to eventually be accepted by the president and actions to be taken. There's a lot that can happen here, a lot that we can do, and the more we can prepare those resolutions as they come forth, the more work we can do in the background, the more likely they are to net a result. One thing I want to just note is that most resolutions should be part of the agenda as opposed to new business. You know, the expectation is that they can be both, but the majority of them have been discussed and brought to committees and had conversations around them. And that they are then vetted thoroughly through the constituents that are impacted by it, as well as those that you're asking action of. When a resolution is brought to the floor, it should be reviewed by the sponsors in detail. It should not be reviewed by the sponsors in detail. It should really just be about explaining the idea, the abstract behind the resolution and the key components, and not reading the resolution verbatim. We've witnessed a lot of that in the previous session, and much of that work was done because oftentimes these things were new business. And doing that legwork behind the scenes to dot all those I's and cross all those T's and ask those questions shows a respect for everyone's time here, and it shows an engagement and a desire to make change within the organization. We will adhere to the expectation that a resolution is brought forth, and then it is voted on 2 weeks after. The reason behind that is it allows for opportunity for the public to see that resolution, to see the information that's there. It's made part of the public record. It allows the public to then provide us with comments and feedback. That is so important, what we do. It's not just about all of us doing what we see fit. It's about us representing our constituencies. So giving that two-week period in which the constituent groups can review and see the information that is brought forth is so imperative. And those are the times where you can make those small tweaks and changes that maybe when it got to the floor, there were a few feedback items, and you can then react and speak with each other and find ways to make the resolution stronger so that when it does, if it does ultimately pass, it has gone through all those checks and balances. So just a few kind of key expectations that I had that I wanted to speak to, and I hope that we can all find this to be a very effective and fruitful organization, resolutions that aren't just resolutions that are brought forth, but that are resolutions that result in action and change for the university. So I just wanted to briefly give that expectation. As I mentioned, I spoke to that a little bit when I ran for the position, and wanted to reiterate the importance that is to me. So with that, I would like to just go through some brief introductions for our executive committee, and I apologize, I didn't introduce myself. I made an assumption that people knew me, and that's on me, I apologize. But I'm Brandon Fortenberry, I'm the chair for this session. I am the student campus life representative on the employee assembly, as well as the senior training and development manager for Cornell Dining. So I've been at the university, as I mentioned, for about 16 years. So with that, I would like for our executive committee to introduce themselves. I'll turn it to Jacob.
Sure. So my name is Jacob Veit. I'm the executive vice chair for this session. I'm an undergraduate student studying environmental policy and governance at CALS. Like Brandon, I'm really hopeful that we can all work together. You know, I have an idea that if we get one concrete thing done to better the student experience, I think that our time was worthwhile here. So we ought to start listening to students more, I think. So often the student voice is not only ignored, but almost not even heard, from my perspective, by a lot of the administration. But I'm looking favorably on working with all of you and the administration to get some real work done. Thank you,
David. Yeah. I'm Richard Bunzel. I'm professor in the Department of Government. Also member of the Faculty Senate. Vice President of the American Association of University Professors, White Chapter there at Cornell. I do work in political history. And I was also a member of the University Assembly years ago. years ago. And yeah, like Brandon, I certainly know what my way around. So I fall in the pocket sometimes.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nick Aldonov. I'm a second year PhD student in genetics, genomics, and development. I'm both in CALS and the College of Veterinary Medicine. I work at the Baker Institute for Animal Health. And I'll be serving as a ranking member this year. I guess in addition to that, something about me is that I am a firefighter and an EMT, and that's a very big part of who I am and why I make the decisions that I do. So I'm the assistant fire chief for Varna. So if any of you live in Varna or Ellis Hollow, feel free to reach out.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm very excited to have these folks with me and through this session, and looking forward to great things. With that, I would like to do a call for new business. I think we have enough of the time we can do introductions. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and we'll just go around the room here, and then we'll get to the Zoom.
Sounds exciting. My name is Duncan Cady. I am a junior in the College of Industrial Labor Relations from Texas, California. And my role on the University Assembly is the Student Assembly Representative. Where I'm the Student Assembly, I am the Student Disability Representative. A little bit more about me, I guess. I am a transfer student, so last year was my first year. And I'm excited to get to work with all of you.
Hi everyone, my name is Amelie Anagye. I serve as this year's Student Assembly President. I am in the College of Arts and Sciences. I study feminist, gender, sexuality studies in government. Some stuff I've done on campus before this, I helped found the Undergraduate Office of the Student Advocate. I served as a Student Advocate last year. I also write a column for the Philadelphia Leasing.
I am David Heiner. I have been at the university for 13 years now. We're counting. I work for human ecology as a data analytics guy at applications development. And I've been on the employee assembly and the university assembly off and on for the past 3, 4, 5 years, something like that. And I'm happy to be here.
Hi, so I'm Preston Hanley. I'm currently elected presiding officer for the GPSA as we have a vacancy in our president's position. I'm a second year in the MPA program. I am from Peoria, Illinois, and I went to undergrad in Davenport, Iowa at St. Ambrose University. And I got my bachelor's in political science, and so I'm definitely excited to be here.
I'm Cassandra Gordon or Casey. I'm from the College of Arts and Sciences. I'm a sophomore intending to major in CS, and I'm here as a clerk.
Tom Fox. I'm a professor of molecular biology and genetics. I've been on the faculty since 1981. I actually graduated Cornell in 71, 10 years earlier than that. So I do go back a ways. And I teach genetics and close my research lab. This is my second year on the University Assembly. Glad to be back.
Welcome back.
Hi, I'm not here as a member, but as press. I'm the news. My name is Tamara Canis. I'm a news editor at the Toronto Daily Sun, and I wrote stories as well. And I'm excited to be covering my first meeting in person in over a year. I'm excited to meet you. And I'll clarify quotes by email. Don't worry about it.
And I'm Jessica Withers. I'm chair of the Employee Assembly this year. I work at the Catherwood Library in the ILR School, and I represent library and museum staff on the Employee Assembly. I'm happy to be here in person as well.
Great. Well, let's turn over to our folks on the Zoom, and I'll just call out you and you can introduce. We'll start with Marcy.
I'm Marcy Benda. I am on the Employee Assembly. I'm the Education Chair. I'm also the representative for 20 plus years. I've been with the Veterinary College for 21 years, assistant to the Hospital Director, Associate Dean, and I'm happy to be here. It's my first year on the University Assembly. I've been on the EA. I was 2 years prior, and I'm starting a new term this year again.
Marcy. Ian.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ian Akasholo. I'm a third-year law student at Cornell. This is my first year on the University Assembly. Excited to be here.
Thank you. And Stephanie?
Hi, Hi, my name is Stephanie Tanis. I am a second year GGD student. I do research at the Vet Tower. Last year I was on the infrastructure committee, and this is my first year on the university assembly. I'm excited to be here, and I hope to make it to the in-person one next.
Okay, thank you. And Deborah.
Hi, I'm Deborah Howell. I have been at the university 22 years, and I am on the employee assembly. I am the veterans representative there, and I am chairing the campus welfare committee this year for the UA.
Thank you, and Leslie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Leslie Zake. I'm a junior at School of Industrial Labor Relations, and this is my first year on the UA.
And last but certainly not least, Wendy.
Hey, everyone. I'm Wendy Treat. I'm the senior coordinator in the Office of the Assemblies. Tom has me beat at years at the university. I just hit 33 years a couple weeks ago. I'm here remote because Tuesdays are my days to still work from home. So glad to be here and always willing to help and support.
Thank you, Richard, for reminding me to let others do the introductions as well. I appreciate that. So with that, then we'll move on to the next item in the agenda, which is a call for new business. Do we have any new business? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. The approval of the meeting minutes, the May 11th meeting minutes. We were unable to approve those at the end of the last session, so we do need to have a vote on the approval of the last of the meeting minutes. This is probably, go ahead, Martin.
Yep, I just have a question about the minutes. I attended that meeting, but I wasn't listed. I know I wasn't a member at the time. I wasn't even on the others, so I think Deborah Howell was also there as well.
Pardon? Who's the other person?
Deborah Howell. She's also.
Yeah, yep. I was there. Thank you.
So I believe in those circumstances, it was the last session of the previous UA, and you would have been elected to this session of the UA, so you wouldn't be listed as an assembly member on the
I'll make that motion. Second. All right, second motion to add Deborah Howell and Marcy Bennett, the others listed. Any other questions or motions?
With that, I'm going to entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion approved. Seconded.
Seconded. With these particular items, to speak to voting, there are several types of voting. There's unanimous consent. Those are items that are fairly simplistic in nature. So without any objection, we can move forward with unanimous consent. There is the actual voting process, and there's lastly, there's roll call voting. In this particular instance, I would call for unanimous consent. If there are no objections, we would approve.
Yeah, second motion. Unanimous consent.
Seeing no objections, so we'll have with unanimous consent, we'll approve the meeting minutes with those motions out of there. Our next business of the day, we have our proposed 2021 and 2022 meeting schedule listed in the packet there. With that, I'll open the floor to any questions or comments based on the schedule. Well, now that we do plan to host this in person here at 401, there may be some room conflicts that Wendy was working through. There may be some meetings that are entirely virtual, but our hope is that all of these meetings will fit here as much as possible will be hosted both in person and if there are no questions or concerns, again, we entertain a motion to approve this meeting schedule.
Motion to approve.
Second. Thank you from Duncan. And again, we'll move. We'll have this as consent with no objections. We will accept the meeting schedule as listed here. Seeing none, then that motion will pass. Next up in our business of the day, we have committee vacancies. In your packet there, and I left it printed out. It's a little challenging. Oh, this is in color, so it's easier to read. You'll see here the list of committees that we have for the University Assembly, as well as positions that are vacant that are liaisons to specific areas. Yes, Wendy.
My apologies. I just wanted to let you know that the two meetings where there's conflicts with that room, we have scheduled them to be held in 700 Clark Hall.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Wendy. I appreciate the help and support in getting the meeting scheduled.
Yep.
So in regards to each of the many committees you see up there in blue, every one of those committees is established. The top groups are, note there are 11 voting members, which is three from the UA, which includes the committee chair, one from each of the constituent assemblies, and then one from each constituent assembly from the constituency it represents that is not on the assembly. And Richard, as the vice chair of operations, will be the person to help you with appointing those members to your chair, to the committees. If I can get a clarification from Tina or Wendy as far as at this time, do we need to begin voting on those, or those items that would be then sent in for recommendation?
Oh, the sooner the better. If you want to take, if anybody's anxious to fill one of these roles and kind of acknowledge that today, that would be great. I think that the most timely, I think, is, as you know, are the CJC is trying to meet, but all of the standing committees. So
with that, if there are any folks you can nominate yourself to be a part of these committees, if anyone would like to nominate yourself or others to be a part of any of the committees, we can start with the Closing Judicial Committee and work our way through that. Okay with everyone, if there are any nominations for committee members.
Can I speak just briefly about what the sort of the framework for that is, or have you already done that?
We have not. I would love that.
So the COSIN Judicial Committee has, up until this 2 weeks ago when the new Student Code of Conduct came into play, had the specific role of reviewing and recommending members of the University Hearing and Review Boards to serve as the reviewers for cases brought before the Judicial Administrator. And with the new change, there's some procedural changes. Additionally, a nomenclature change. The judicial administrator is no longer, it's now the director of the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards, really trying to get away from the judicial part of that, you know, what that means, that this is more collaborative resolve resolution thing. So the CJC sort of has to re-identify itself and its purpose. I think it'll be a really exciting committee to be a part of. The work actually of recruiting and reviewing and recommending members still exists this year because there's overlap. There's the old infractions that came in under the old code while the new code is being implemented. So a lot of exciting, interesting things if you're interested in that sort of thing. And I think Brandon could probably speak to some more of the particulars. He's been the chair of the CJC and now been very involved in the application of the introduction of the new code, but just to sort of give you an idea of what you might be working on.
Thank you, Gina. I appreciate that. I believe at this time we have currently two faculty members and the chair are the only sitting members of that committee. And as Gina acknowledged, there is definitely work to be done as pertains to what the new code is and what the role is for the CJC.
If I could add, I was on the CJC last year and I have really strongly advised students to go for this position because, particularly with the new code, it pertains exclusively to students. So it would be great if these positions are filled by students because it's going to pertain to them.
So I think, you know, understanding that some of this may be a little overwhelming looking at all of these committees and everything, just want to, again, acknowledge that each of these committees has a standing requirement per our bylaws that there are members from the UA, from each constituent assembly and Senate, as well as members that are appointed by each of the constituent assemblies that aren't a part of them. So, Richard, this is something we'll be working on too. I'm sure that we can get these committees staffed up So I won't make this pause until somebody feels guilty enough to nominate themselves or someone else. But acknowledge it is something that it is a requirement that we fill these positions.
And just to be real specific, for the constituent assemblies, one from within the assembly and one from the constituency that you represent. So for the SA, it'd be somebody on the SA and then an undergraduate student, applicably to the GPSA and then the employee assembly as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, I'm not sure, possibly the office of the assemblies or perhaps Richard would be interested in actually making a list of all the vacancies by position. So we can actually see clearly like which constituency groups are not represented on which committee. Because, yeah, just looking at this, it's hard to tell necessarily what's filled and what's not.
So the only ones that are filled are the faculty?
Right. But I'm speaking specifically just which positions are filled and which are not.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. And Wendy has that list for us. As I mentioned, this particular one, the chair, which is a graduate. And then two faculty members are the only seated members, so all of their positions are broken. The next one is the Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and Environment, which, if my memory serves me correctly, Ian is the chair of. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Ian, would you like to introduce what that committee is about?
Sure. In brief, infrastructure, technology, and the environment is about the intersection between the development of campus infrastructure while also ensuring that sustainability goals are kept in mind in order to produce the best, most sustainable campus with some slight intersection with other working groups and committees such as carbon neutral.
Thank you, Ian. I'll take a moment to see if there is anyone who would like to nominate, or perhaps, Ian, do you know the vacancies that you have, or might be easier to tell us what positions are filled currently? And Ian, if you're not aware of that, perhaps if Wendy or Gina knows that particular.
So assuming that the list on the UA website is up to date, the current vacancies for the committee are a student assembly representative, an employee assembly representative, a GPSA representative, graduate and professional student representative, another employee representative, two university assembly representatives, and an undergraduate student representative.
So again,
I'm just going to ask for planned information. So saying like an essay representative, would that be an essay representative
of the UA or an essay representative in general? Great question to clarify again. It's a member of the essay that's on the UA. It's a member of the essay that is not on the USA, of the TUA, and then it's one that is part of the constituency of students. Is that correct? You know, I get to
So the UA members can be from any constituency. They just have to be on the UA. And then the SA, it could be someone that's on the UA from the SA, but not necessarily. It could be someone that's just on the SA. And then your last group is any student, any undergraduate student. And that could also be an undergraduate student that happens to be on the SA, but it doesn't necessarily have to be someone that's on the SA.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I ask a follow-up? Sorry. Just so the not on the, sorry, so it's an essay rep from the UI, and then just a general.
So to clarify again, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I think what Gina was saying earlier is that basically the only positions that are filled on all of the UA committees are the two faculty members and the chair, and then everything else is open. So the GPSA needs to appoint two people, the SA needs to appoint two people, and the UA needs to appoint two people to each one of these, and the EA.
And from the UA representation, it can be any representative from the UA, so it could be three students on a committee from the UA, and that's okay. Three from the UA, and then you have one from each of the constituent groups on that committee, and then one of the
I'm pretty sure I volunteered at the end of last year's session for one of them. I'll have to go back and look, and I'll communicate to whatever that one is.
Great. Thank you. list. And Ian.
At this time, I'd actually like to put forward a nomination for Dave Heiner.
Second.
I'll take him.
Dave accepts the nomination. Yeah, and I think with these particular ones, we can, these don't require a vote, is that correct, Ina?
That's correct.
So with this, we could allow for unanimous consent. Any objection to David Heiner joining this committee?
No objection.
Seeing none, welcome to that committee there. Any other nominations for the Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and Science? Seeing none, we'll move to the next one, the Campus Welfare Committee. And I apologize, I don't know who all the chairs are.
Deborah,
there we go. Thank
yes,
you, Deborah.
Hi.
Deborah, would you like to speak to talk a little bit about the Campus Welfare Committee?
So I'm going to wing it a little bit and hope that Wendy and Gina help me a little bit, because it's my first year as chair, although I have been serving on the Employee Assembly Welfare Committee. So we focus on things that affect the health and welfare of students, faculty, and staff. Most recently, we just saw the mental health website roll out for everyone that was just announced. And so it's things that affect campus welfare. So some things might be transportation occasionally talks to us. Michelle Arteby might talk to us, but it's along those lines.
So this is to cover the pandemic, right?
It could. I mean, the pandemic overlaps a lot of areas, but it could. Or it could at least involve bringing forward recommendations or resolutions.
I see we have someone in the meeting, Casey. There's a couple of items in the chat. Oh, yeah. You got that. Perhaps you could check the chat to see if there's anything in the items.
Do we know where Leslie?
I think it's just Wendy.
She left a while ago. All right. Any nominations for members to the campus welfare or other questions for the none then? Our last one.
I was just going to ask for a point of clarification. So if Deborah is, does she count as our employee assembly representative, or do we also need someone else?
The chair
is
and two more. So okay. Three total from the UA. And she does not, she counts from the UA, not from the EA.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And then we have a couple that are a little bit different here. We have the Campus Planning Committee. And Gina, maybe you can help me with that one there.
Gosh, I'm probably, I can wing it as well. This one is an associated committee to the UA. It's a university committee that draws from community members to serve on it. And because the UA is representative of all constituencies, there are members from the UA that sit on there. I hesitate to talk much about the charge because I'm just not, I don't know the particulars as well as I should. But it has to do with the campus master plan, the North Campus expansion, some of the infrastructure things. A lot of the infrastructure kinds of long-term planning things that the university is involved with or looking towards. Sometimes it might involve not specifically, not a moment in time endowment, but again, sort of the long range things that the university is doing, planning, and funding.
If you volunteer, any of you volunteer for the planning committee, I can give you the draft of the Cornell master plan for 2008, which has colored pictures, designs, all kinds of stuff. I inherited it some time ago. I was never on the planning committee, but it's a wonderful document, and you can see what are the plans now, plans then.
How much of it has come true?
It's a dream book, right? You dream. It's wonderful. It really is wonderful. But you only get it if you volunteer to serve on the planning committee.
Well, I see Wendy has her hand up. Maybe she's looking to get this wonderful book. Go ahead, Wendy.
No, I was actually going to help Gina out because I have the website up and the description of the campus planning committee. So it states, promotes comprehensive and clear planning processes and stewardship of Cornell University's Ithaca campus. The committee's charge is to review and make recommendations to the president regarding physical planning for the campus, including master planning, land use and physical development, landscape and environmental planning and design, transportation planning, including circulation and parking, infrastructure and new construction and renovations as they relate to overall planning, character, and integrity of the physical plant. So,
Thank you. Wendy, are you able to tell us how many, what our vacancies are in that particular one?
I sure can. Hold on one second.
The one, it says here there's the one liaison. Is that all that we need to fill here? Is that correct?
That I believe is correct. Yes. There's just the UA liaison because then the other assemblies have to appoint as well.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Yep, that's it. One university assembly liaison.
And Ian, go ahead.
In the interest of aligning infrastructure, technology, and the environment with campus planning, I'd actually like to nominate myself to serve on the committee.
Sorry, if I could just add. The chair of the committee, Sasha Zivkovic, actually said that the UA liaison currently is Valerie Eimer, and he is open to getting one more university assembly liaison. So just putting that out there. So he said, we are also more than happy if you choose to reappoint Valerie as the UA liaison.
I move to reappoint Valerie.
And Valerie was not able to make it. So we have a motion for, we have a nomination for Ian. Ian is nominated. Do we have a second for that nomination?
Yes,
second.
He might be an ex officio member on that committee. I'm not sure. Is he not? He's not. Okay.
No, but I think that especially since the chair of the campus planning committee is open to two UA members, if Valerie can serve as well, then that's wonderful. And Ian can do as so.
Yeah, so Valerie is already a general member, so even if we don't reappoint Valerie, she will still stay.
Right.
So with Valerie not being up here to speak to whether she would accept the nomination, I would recognize that we have a nomination for Ian in a second. Are there any objections to Ian being appointed to the committee? Unanimous consent with no objection. Ian, welcome to that committee.
I have a question, Ian. Do you want this 2008 plan?
I'd love to see a copy of it for.
You can own a copy.
We'd be happy to store that in the office of the assemblies.
Sure.
And that way anybody could see it. Ian will hold it there for you.
Yep. So, in the due ceremony, I transfer this archive.
All right. And then the last of the committees that we have here is the Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board. Again, another one that I'm not familiar with. And perhaps Wendy, if you would let us know what our vacancy is in that particular committee. And if anyone may be able to speak to that committee.
Wendy, do you have that website up? Is that something you can share?
Wait, I'm sorry. I was actually just about to hit leave, so I missed what was asked of me.
Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board. You can just read off what that is about.
Sure, hold on one second.
Thank you.
And also, just as a quick point as well, I went back to the chair of the CPC to his email, and Valerie's term actually ends today. It expired August 2021.
She will still stay as a general member.
Okay, Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board shall review decisions that have been denied in whole or in part by Transportation and Mail Services administrative staff on matters relating to violation appeals, requests for special parking grants for those claiming financial hardship, and exceptions to parking rules and regulations and or normal permit eligibility criteria.
Thank you, Wendy. And do you know what our vacancy is there?
I'll have to pull up. It's in that spreadsheet, the composition of it, so it should state what the composition is or what is missing.
So what I might recommend that we do for the sake of time, and we have a number of liaison positions here. If folks would not object to it, I might recommend that we put together the whole list with descriptions of those positions. Send that out to the full UA just for folks to be able to look at that information and hopefully at the next meeting be able to bring member nomination.
I was actually hoping to nominate myself for one of these, if that's okay, or
would not object to that at all.
Okay, I'd like to be the Student Insurance Advisory Committee liaison.
We have a nomination for Nick. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any objection? Seeing none, we'll appoint Nick to that committee.
Brandon, if I remember right, I could be wrong, but if I remember right, every member of the UA is required to have one of these in the committee appointments.
That is correct.
I think that'd be a good thing to remind people of.
I definitely thank you, Richard. And yes, it is a requirement that if you serve on a committee, so it's something that, again, this is part of our bylaws that we fulfill these, so it's very important.
So we'll draft up, as Jacob suggested, a list of all of the committees, all of the positions, what specifically is, what constituency is specifically necessary. And we'll get that out well in advance so everybody can share it with their respective assemblies and bring it back and have some robust nominations at your next meeting.
Thank you very much. If folks then are comfortable, we can move on to the next agenda items. Objections?
On these committees, you gotta serve. It's first come, first serve. You know, so you get on.
Yeah. Get the one you want before it's all filled up. All right. So with that, then we have our next item here is just an overview of the summer university hearing and review board appointment. Just would like to update folks that over the summer, I want to thank the executive committee as well as the committee for the CBC for helping us to be able to fill emergency appointments to the UHRB. On matters pertaining specifically to the previous campus code of conduct. These appointees that were appointed over the summer will specifically and exclusively hear matters as they pertain to the campus code of conduct. For those students who are under that code of conduct and are their cases are still pending, the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards will be holding their cases in adherence with that campus code of conduct. So we're able to appoint a full member of the UHRB. I believe we might have just one or two vacancies in the employee side, but enough for the AYCCS to be able to continue the work they do to finish out those cases so that we can now move forward to what is the student code of conduct. With that change and that shift, we now have our student code of conduct in which we need to appoint a full and total university hearing and review board. And the way in which the code is written is that requirement falls for each of the assemblies in the Senate to solicit applications. And so one of the things that James, the CJC committee in conjunction with the OSCCS, we worked to shorten up the application process a little bit over the summer. We streamlined the Qualtrics survey that we asked students to fill out. and because it was specifically students we were looking for. But we've put together and we are presenting to each of the assemblies and senates a basic playbook of how you can go about soliciting applications with the wonderful help of the Office of the Assemblies to collect and anonymize those applications. But again, at this time, there will be need to be an entire UHRD filled through applications solicited by each of the assemblies and the senate. So while you may have a full group that's sitting on the previous campus code of conduct, UHRB, you will now need to solicit applications for the student code of conduct, UHRB. The idea there is that those two do not mix. You don't have a somebody that comes in here as a campus code of conduct one week, and then the next week they go in here as student code of conduct, because that would be challenging for those UHRB members to be able to make that shift around what are the expectations. And the goal here is to keep those very separate. So that is upcoming. We'll be presenting to each of the groups. I'll be presenting to the employee assembly myself tomorrow. James is working to get on the GPSA and the SA agenda, as well as I have a meeting with the Ija Rosa and Nima Guga to talk to them about the faculty side of things. So with that, I'll ask if there are any questions or thoughts pertaining to that information in the UHRB. That may be the first time I've done UHRB and not have 18 questions following it. I feel like I've finally gotten how to explain what the different boards are. So you'll be each asking to do that. And the hope is that we can get that filled in a timely fashion so the OSCCS, the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards, is able to begin training in the fall for students, faculty, and staff who are hearing these cases. So one of the things to speak to is that, you know, this is a student code of conduct, but we still have students, faculty and staff, graduate and professional and undergraduate students, as well as faculty and staff on there, because while the matters are specific to students, they can be brought forth and can be addressed by faculty and staff. So it's important that those voices continue to be there in those conversations and hearing those perspectives. Thank you in advance to each of the assemblies and senate for helping us to get that done. We hope to meet it in a timely fashion, but understand there may be some challenges in certain areas. We'll work with us if you feel you're not able to meet the timeline, we'll continue to work on that. And as in regards to that, as Gina mentioned, there is a need for a change in what is the Codes and Judicial Committee, because the word judicial is no longer part of the process. So we always call this the CJC, the Codes and Judicial Committee. And so James, we'll be looking at how we can make adjustments to what are the bylaws that pertain to that committee, what is its roles and responsibilities. And one of the recommendations that I've made, and it's simply my recommendation, but whatever the CJC sees fit to present, would be that that group can actually also work on things such as bylaws and charters for the university assembly. To be able to review those, because there has to be a change, because it refers to CJC, which the name needs to change, and then how to change the bylaws. So that's just one particular aspect of what could be done, but there's a wide variety of things in that. Any questions about that for you as well?
I know we already passed it, but if there's an opportunity, can I sit on the CJC?
Absolutely. If we would like to, I don't think it'd be okay to go back to nominations on the CJC.
I'll second that.
We have a nomination and a second. Any objections? Seeing none, we'll have a point. Anali, Anali, can you see your last name?
Anani.
Anani, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Anali and Anani will be joining the CKC. Look at that, it just had a good feeling. We've got someone involved there. All right. With that, we're going to move on to the first item of new business, and I will turn this over to Jacob and Nick for the UA Resolution 1.
All right. Well, thank you, Brendan. It is an honor to be the inaugural resolution, the first one of the year. So it's fairly straightforward. I sent an email yesterday to kind of cut down on the time that I would be spending talking about it today. Let me give you some background on this. So this is particularly coming from me as a PhD student, which is why I included it in the sponsored by. So as PhD students, we're kind of stuck in this limbo between being students and employees. We're not treated as either by the university. And we kind of have to be here the entire time. So even though we're students, we would go to work every day. And so we were obviously required to get vaccinated, and we happily got vaccinated. But one of the problems is that when we're in our offices, when we're at work, we don't know if we're interacting with vaccinated or unvaccinated people. In a classroom, you know for a fact that everyone's vaccinated because all students have to be vaccinated. And we have a 99% vaccination rate for faculty. Right now, we're seeing that there's no mandate for employees to be vaccinated or visitors to campus or contractors. Columbia University actually does require all of this, and it is part of their formal requirements to be able to come back to work. There's a number of different institutions as well that do it. I just wanted to list Columbia because it's another Ivy League school in our state, but a bunch of other schools do it as well. Large companies have opted to do this. And now with the FDA fully approving the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, there's no longer the question of, well, I don't know if it's safe or not. It's safe. The FDA says it's safe. And that gives legal basis, according to the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, to require people coming to work to be vaccinated with obviously certain exceptions, such as medical or religious exemptions. So with that, I just want to bring us in line with what other universities have done, to bring us in line with our goal and mission as a research and science university. We should be following the research. We should be following the science. And at the end of the day, I know that this is not something that's very plausible to happen. I would love for it to happen, but I understand there's going to be pushback. So if there is pushback, that's why we've included this very last provision in here that says, if this is rejected, we'd like to know why it's rejected. We'd like the university to tell us why they can't enforce this mandate like other universities have, like other companies have. And maybe they have a valid reason to not be able to do it. Maybe it's something that we as researchers and scientists can't see. Maybe it's something that's on the policy side. But I'd love to get an official explanation from the university as to why that's the case. So that's the resolution that Jacob and I are sponsoring. I'd love to open up for questions and comments.
Any questions?
Richard,
you go first.
Well, by chance, because we had a reception yesterday where Mike Kotlikoff was there, and because this resolution had already been proposed, I took the liberty of asking him about this issue. And I have a feeling, he told me things that he said I was perfectly fine to talk about here. I have a feeling these are things they don't want to actually get out and say officially at the university level. But there were two main issues he had with it. The one I think isn't really that germane, but he claims that Columbia actually has an opt-out system, and so do the other universities, so that they're saying they're mandating it, but in fact they're allowing people to opt out. I don't know if that's true. I mean, I assume I don't think he's lying to me. But the other thing that is a big issue here is our essential workers. And it is among the essential workers that most of the vaccine hesitancy is occurring. And they are essential. If they are going to run the dining halls, they are going to have to employ people who are not willing to get vaccinated. And if they force them, they will probably leave. And in this economy, they're not going to have any trouble finding another job. So what they are doing, of course, is testing those people twice. And the supervisors know who's being tested twice. And while you may not have a specific I'm vaccinated, I'm not vaccinated, if you're going to test twice every week, mandatory, they know who that is. And I have a feeling they don't really want to come out and say all this, you know, in a press release. So I'm just going to put that out there. They have reasons. I know the university administration is not trying to kill people by lowering vaccination rates. And so I'm not actually in favor of twisting their arm to come out on this, because it's true that we should pay attention to the science, but there are a lot of people who are very important at running this university who are not in that group. And we live in an environment, if you go outside of Ithaca, you will notice it's not like the campus. And we have workers who come from all over the place. I know many people who commute in from Watkins Glen every day. And I think that there's concern here about creating a situation where we lose these employees. So I just wanted to pass on what I heard yesterday, which is the response that you may actually have to force them, if they have to do this, to come out and say it in a press release, which I'm not sure they want.
I would defer to our online people, because they're going to have trouble engaging in the conversation. And then I have
to. Okay. And then would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, it's not a quick response, but I can do that later. Can just do all the comments and then I'll just respond.
Okay. I have Marcy up next.
Sorry. So, I actually went to a bunch of people in my area. I work at the vet college, and I really think that the vet college, and that's what I really pay attention to, I'll be honest with you, has a good vaccination rate. Sorry, my phone. Has a good vaccination rate. So I think most of us do listen to the science and do, are vaccinated and are doing the right thing. But as I'm sorry, if I don't know who was just speaking, but as we know, there are a lot of Trump signs still up. So we are in an area where there are a lot of different opinions. That being said, nobody really wants to mandate it. I spoke to a couple of people that just felt they weren't, they weren't hurting anybody. Science says that's not true. You can pass it on a little bit more if you're not vaccinated. But again, like I said, I want to say we're about 90% vaccinated on campus. And in speaking about the other colleges that mandate it, looking at the other IVs anyway, I don't believe they are mandating it for employees and faculty. And if they are, they're saying if you have a strong objection, then you don't need to get vaccinated. So there is that out anyway. But again, I think our numbers are good. And if we do have visitors coming to campus, they are required to wear a mask if they're not vaccinated, and also get tested twice a week and all those other things. But again, mandating it is kind of hard, but I feel it can be helpful, but on the other hand, again, you don't want to mandate it, and especially if you can just opt out of it too. It'll be hard, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Thank you, Marcy. Recognize Deborah next.
Thank you. One more thing that I wanted to throw in the mix that has come up in at the employee town halls that have been hosted, this question has come up, is that currently all of our 13 bargaining units represented at the university, and to make a change like this requires revisiting the bargaining unit agreement. Which would be very difficult and challenging. We have to revisit all of those union contracts. So that is a big issue on the staff side, is all of the bargaining units and that there's not just one to bargain with, but I can't remember if it's 12 or 13. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. I'll return back to Richard.
Yeah, I was the same reception. So were you, Brandon? Yesterday, and I talked at length with Mike about this. Everything that the people said sounds right from what he said. Something like 90% of the staff are vaccinated.
I think he was like 8% or so were not, but that's close enough, but it's ballpark. His estimate was, and that comes to about 700 or so, 600 or 700 staff at Cornell are not vaccinated. Of those, this was a wild guess, no one knows for sure, something like 100 were not under any circumstances going to be vaccinated. They would be hardcore. And he was afraid, as Tom said, and others, he was afraid that those people in leading could not be replaced. So that was a very, those are the number types of things that he was looking at. There was also, I asked about the bargaining units, and he said that's an issue, and it would be difficult, but that was the major concern. The bargaining with these diehard people would be, you wouldn't bargain, you mandated, they would just quit. So those were the considerations. I do think the university assembly has a role here, though, I'm glad Nick brought this up, but we do have a role in thinking about the pandemic and regulations generally, and about how to, because this is basically, to some extent, Nick was saying, it's adjudicating rights and responsibilities across the different classes of the community. And there is something to that. And there's something too about the shared experience, because we have experiences from different parts of the university and different concerns and so forth. And I think we do have a role. And so I'm glad they brought this up, because this is a chance to begin to discuss those issues. I'm not sure this adopting this resolution, but we don't do that today anyway. Right? That would be in 2 weeks. So, but I'm not sure adopting this resolution is the right way to go. But some discussion of the pandemic and university policies generally, I think, is appropriate for the university assembly. And so I encourage us to do that.
Okay, yeah, so thank you to everyone for the responses. If I could just go over everything that was said, and then before I do that, I did look at our bylaws and charter, and while it has been precedent that we do postpone resolutions, I would suggest, like David mentioned last year, that we actually formalize that before we enforce it, because as is right now, we don't have any written documents saying that resolutions have to be postponed, so I was under the impression that we could have this vote today. Not going to push for it, but if we are going to do this going forward, I think we should have it formally written out that we can't vote on the same day on this if we want to take that out. Now, as to the specifics of the resolution, before I was at Cornell, I was actually at Columbia, so I was in a position to speak to university leadership there in the past few days and see how that's working out. So the thing that everyone's saying, or that everyone's been told that there are exceptions, is untrue. I have, and I can get on the record from vice presidents of the university, that this is not the case. So actually, even on their webpage, it says that the only exceptions are going to be religious and medical, which is the same as Cornell. And it actually says that if you don't have a second dose from a two-dose vaccine, you are literally not allowed to access campus, no exceptions, beginning September 2nd. So I don't know where all this is coming from, that there's exceptions, but if we want to talk about this in 2 weeks, I can actually come with an official statement from Columbia University saying that it's not the case. So I do appreciate the provost trying to mitigate our concerns, but I don't appreciate invoking other universities when that's really not their policy. I have done my due diligence and research on this. Second thing is bargaining. And as Richard said, it's not the biggest problem, because if Columbia was able to do it, and believe you me, Columbia also has unions, we get the big rat in front of campus all the time. If they could do it, we can do it. We have lawyers, we have university counsel, we have a legal team that can be handled. The third part is, I guess, we're really being asked in this position to think about, okay, well, what's more important to us? Retaining these 100 employees or guaranteeing the safety of 30,000 people. And to me, and that's why I started this meeting by saying that I make my decisions as an EMT and a firefighter. Life safety is always more important than anything else. So those are my three points on this, but yeah, I do appreciate everyone's feedback.
So I just want to make a point, you know, on line 38, you say, let it be resolved that the university shall offer paid time off for employees experiencing side effects. And they already do. So,
oh, okay.
So I, when you say you did your homework, maybe you did your homework with Columbia, but you didn't reach out to any HR professional to ask, you know, about paid time off. It doesn't go against your employee sick time. It's already all out there. So I would actually encourage you to meet with an HR professional to see what kind of benefits are being offered to staff who are positive for COVID, who need time off, that kind of stuff. And make sure you're doing your due diligence within Cornell. Because that right there just says that it's out there. And if you're trying to put it in there, tell the university that to do something that they've already done. So I would just make sure you be mindful of that.
Okay. I appreciate the comment. I was actually very willing to amend that until it got personal, but that's all right. You said that I didn't do my due diligence, which I feel is a personal attack, but I don't need to go into that. The webpage for HR actually says that they don't, but I appreciate you pointing that out, putting it on record. So I will reach out to an HR professional and actually ask them why the webpage says that they don't when I've been told otherwise at the UA. I'm happy to strike that. In fact, that's actually even better. Makes it even more likely, I think, that people will feel like they should get the vaccine if they do get paid time off for side effects after the vaccine.
Oh, wait a minute. You're talking about side effects after the vaccine?
Yes.
Well, I can say that, you know, if you contract COVID, they give you time off for it.
Yes, and that is on the webpage. Okay. And the 4 hours of paid time for getting the vaccine are there, but not for side effects of the vaccine, which is what I've tracked at.
Gotcha. Thank you for the clarification.
I want to add one of the things, and talking with Mike about this, I suggested bounties, lottery, something to encourage people to comply that would be not a mandate. And he said he would think about it. I do think that's, you know, I don't have this lottery.
They even had it at the state fair.
We could do something like this, and it doesn't have to be paid. But I think that would help some of these people to get over that hump of the vaccine. The other thing we talked about was, I said that, you know, many people, I'm already eligible for a booster shot. If we're ready. And I urge Cornell to establish clinics on campus soon as it's available for these booster shots. And that would be good not only for the health of the community, but it would also be good for morale. Because some of the things, you know, I think somewhere in there it says guarantee of the health of people. No, nothing's going to guarantee it. There's transmission, even if you're doubly vaccinated. But what you want to do is minimize the consequences of contracting this virus. But sooner or later, my bet is, sooner or later, we're all going to get it.
And so, but getting this done, this booster shot and getting these clinics going, I think that's a really good idea. I hope it's one of the things, for example, that if Mike decides not to do that, that we could decide to recommend, which I think would be a good idea. It could be right on campus. You know, you just walk in and do it. Anyway, that's my two cents.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you again. I'm sorry to have to talk again. What Nick said kind of also brought forth what I didn't say is I would love to see a campus fully vaccinated. I don't know if I could just, you know, put my name and support the resolution, but I mean, that would be great to see everybody vaccinated. And I would also support some type of a booster, any kind of clinics here on campus as well, because I'm almost at my time to get boosted too. Also, what we didn't talk about is faculty. How do faculty feel? I mean, we talked about staff, but I assume there's some faculty that haven't been vaccinated. So how do faculty feel about that as well? And is it an issue for them? I know staff probably, but yes. But how about faculty?
I believe if you look at the statistics, Marcy, that the faculty numbers are similar to the students, around 99% vaccinated. And staff numbers are at 90%.
Yeah. So, a few things. So I hope I don't ramble on here because I've got a bunch of different things in my head going on. But first, I believe that we do have to vote on this next week. I'm not sure if it was implicitly stated last year, but I believe it is in the bylaws that we do have to wait a week or motion to move it into business of the day. Right. So I definitely think that we should wait 2 weeks to review this. Additionally, as some of you who have worked with me on the UA or whether it was in the infrastructure committee last year, know that I really think that resolutions serve also an alternative purpose, which is the one that we're having right now, is to actually discuss these topics that are super important. And with this resolution, you know, Nick, as the prime sponsor, I think did a good job. But there are certainly areas that should be amended, as we spoke about, and as we've spoken about thus far today. So a few things. First, there is talk amongst the student body that there is a doctoring of vaccination cards among students that are being uploaded. We want to somehow implement. There are programs and softwares that can detect photoshopping and photo editing and doctoring. Some sort of program that will audit a certain number of cards to see folks who've gotten vaccinated. If anything, even if we don't find anything, I think it's an incentive for those students to actually go out and get it done. Additionally, I spoke with Vice President Lombardi yesterday about having booster shots, and they're already in the works and talking about making sure that we have the infrastructure in the coming weeks and months to make sure that it's on campus here. I actually got my 2 shots here on campus, both of extraordinarily convenient. Someone who's always busy to go to Syracuse was a hassle, so to have them here was a great thing, and I hope that we can do that.
I will share myself that I am fully vaccinated, and I'm actually the university HR is working on a video that they're looking to produce, speaking to staff members about their stories. You know, they are taking that approach of the advocacy for vaccine. So I'll be, you know, speaking to my story, why I chose to be vaccinated, and why I encourage others to consider and think about that process. So I just wanted to add that piece to the record as well, for that folks know that the university is looking at what they can do. In addition, the vaccine clinics, as you were able to participate, were available to employees in the spring and into the summer as well. As well as having members of our, I'm in the student campus life realm, and we're United Auto Workers and Dining. They have the United Auto Workers representative speaking to bargaining unit staff members about the vaccine and encouraging them, have them come here and speak to members of the UAW, along with Dr. Koretsky, MVP Opperman, as well as the UAW president local, to talk to them about why they should consider that and Dr. Beretsky was there to answer questions around vaccine hesitancy, which I thought was great. And that's something that I would definitely hope to see more of, because Zoom only reaches so far. There's a limit to how much Zoom people want to view and how much people, to Thomas' point, you know, many of these employees are our essential workers, and many of them are not, like myself, on Zoom all day long, and they don't tend to tune into those town halls and things of that nature. So having folks go there and do those conversations, I thought was really, really well appreciated, just to provide some insight into some things that have happened. Any other conversations?
Just make one little point, which, Nick, I understand completely the concern about everybody's safety. When I actually think about the fact that it's clear now that vaccinated people can get infected and at some frequency can pass it on, and those of us who are vaccinated don't have to get tested, most of us faculty don't anyway. Testing unvaccinated people twice a week, every week, may actually be safer than letting those of us who are vaccinated run around untested. I mean, this is really murky. I don't have the answer, obviously. But I would just not get... I don't think we'd be that much safer than we already are if these diehards got vaccinated. We would be somewhat safer, I agree. But I don't think it's a black and white issue, is my point. And I don't know anything about the Columbia issue. I don't know that it's even that germane to us, frankly, up here. We do are in a slightly different environment than Manhattan. Our surroundings are slightly different. But anyway, yeah.
I will just add, you know, a personal perspective to it. I am vaccinated, and I've also gotten COVID vaccination, but after being vaccinated.
Despite,
yes. And, you know, unfortunately, I also got the COVID from a person or friend who was also vaccinated. So, to your point, you know, being tested twice a week might be more safer than...
If they tested us all twice a week, would be safer.
Yeah, and that's, you know, just a personal perspective. I don't think mandating a vaccine is necessarily the solution. Certainly encouraging the vaccine, setting up clinics, having incentives to get those last few people to get the vaccine would be a better avenue. It's just personal perspective.
Hi everyone, sorry, this is my first time kind of speaking here. I'm an SA member, obviously U is a very different forum, but I do feel like one of the reasons I joined the UA is, of course, to share the student's perspective, and I love that in this conversation we've been able to include student perspectives. I hope we don't lose the student's perspective. Specifically on the previous point, I felt here to speak in note to some recent changes to policies for student testing. I'm not sure how many of you are fully aware, but most student populations right now are being tested at least once a week.
Right.
Greek life and athletes, as of, I believe, yesterday, went up to twice a week. I, along with Jacob, was in that same meeting with most of you yesterday. Sorry, I didn't meet you. Weird event. What happened? But I did have the same conversation with President Pollack, Vice President Lombardi, of similar note of that we are testing. We have students with vaccines. This disease, this virus is not going anywhere. What is the future look like? You know, it's an uncertain time. Certainly all of us share that. And I would note that I've read through this resolution now, I think, four times, Dr. Sandy and all of you. It doesn't necessarily focus on testing. I don't believe it actually says testing once, highlighting the fact that these are not mutually exclusive issues. I can't speak to all of your perspectives. Obviously, I've been at the university for a year. You know, I don't have the insight on employees. I can say, though, that from a student perspective, testing is not been a problem. Testing has not been something that's been mutually exclusive to being vaccinated or unvaccinated. And testing has been part of the student experience for now well over a year. I came to Cornell, and my first experience, most people is seeing beautiful views, stepping in their dorm room, whatnot, starting a job. Mine was a huge up my nose. So I would mention that if the concern with safety involves testing, then maybe that'd be a future resolution encouraging increased testing. We did a fantastic job with that last year. I think that we learned a lot from the vaccine rollout. And I think that being part of a world-class institution that Cornell is, we can continue that through our testing, continue that through our discussion of vaccines. And I think it's important to note those are not mutually exclusive. I hope we can say that as this resolution moves forward.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of like the second that, like, you know, the different perspective from the graduate school. We had a meeting last night, and a lot of constituent voice concern about the graduate students not being tested. And we were kind of asking the provost, like, different things about why that's the case. But, I think that having, creating a resolution to make sure that different groups are being tested, I really agree with that. Some sort of, requiring vaccinations will probably make things safer, but, I think I agree, like, testing could be a better option to add into that as well, especially if, like, we have, like, different populations of students who just aren't being tested. I don't really understand the difference between not testing graduate students and testing undergraduates. I don't understand, like, what the mindset between the difference. We both go to class, we both go to events. Like, I don't know where they draw the distinction between those two groups. And I'm kind of lost there. So I would definitely like to explore those options that we've been kind of talking about.
So I've been listening, and I wanted to just say, Nick and Jacob, what I'm hearing is that everybody has concerns. We all of our constituents have their own concerns and their own, I would say, fears is what I'm also hearing. And I think just this conversation shows that a collaborative approach and a way to help the entire campus move forward and to be safe, all of us to be safe. I would love to see that more than a mandate. So I just wanted to share that with you after listening to everyone. That's what I'm
doing. Yes, and we'll recognize Marcy, and then I think we're out of the time. We'll need to extend it. Go ahead, Marcy.
Okay. Sorry to talk again. I feel like I'm talking a lot, but I have working at the vet college. I've been at the vet college since the beginning of the pandemic. I've been working on campus. So I've been tested probably about 150-60 times. I don't even know how many times. But one thing that the vet college is doing is they're mandating all students, I believe all students to still get tested, all students, staff, faculty, on clinics, which isn't everyone in the hospitals, to still get tested once a week through the daily check. And it's so convenient. It's just right downstairs from where we all are. But yeah, just letting you know what's happening at the Vet College.
Thank you very much. And with that, we have just a few minutes left, so I would entertain either a motion to extend or a motion as it pertains to tabling or address.
I'll move to postpone this resolution to the next meeting. But I'll also add that if anyone would like to make amendments or changes to it, I would really strongly encourage you to reach out to me and let me know what you'd like changed, and then we can have a discussion at the next meeting. I do think that vaccination is, I think that testing is super important. I do think we should have increased testing for everyone. But I'm going to agree with Duncan and say that I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And I think that we can have a collaborative effort, full of incentive, full of lots of testing, but ultimately we still want to get everyone vaccinated. But I think this was a productive discussion.
So we have a motion, I believe it's a motion
I want to postpone it to the next meeting. There's a difference because table doesn't have to go into business, whereas postponing does.
Okay. Yeah. So that's second for that motion. Yeah. So second. So the motion has been postponed to the next meeting. And then,
just a quick point of information. Do amendments need to be made publicly? Like, can we amend a resolution kind of together with a few different colleagues? Or because this was the resolution that was presented today, we would have to make those amendments publicly at the next meeting? Is that how it would work?
I would move unanimous consent that Nick amend as you wish.
Okay.
For the next meeting. So that you don't have to go back and forth with everybody to do that. I kind of think that the resolution itself will probably be the basis for broader discussion. And so the amendments and changes you will make will be part of that discussion. But I think voting that up or down is probably not the real point in the end. So I move unanimous consent that you amend as you need be.
So to clarify, we have first have a motion to postpone, was that seconded?
Yes.
Okay, that was seconded. Now we have a motion to be able to make amendments and drop back. I'm not really clear on how that would work.
It's kind of like sending it back to the committee.
Yeah. So I don't know. I know those two might be contradictory if we're postponing it and giving it the ability to be fully amended.
Right. So I think we're reserving a time slot for it next meeting, but we're also allowing to make changes to it based on the feedback that we get.
Actually, usually the person moving a resolution can accept amendments, friendly amendments right to it without this. That's basically what's going on. So, I mean, if they don't like it, they're going to reject it. Otherwise, it'd be a friendly amendment.
For the sake of time, I think we need clarity on this between now and the next meeting. Obviously, you can continue to work on the items for the resolution, and we can get clarification on how best to address whatever amendments may come up as it pertains to time. That's not available. I think for the sake of time, we can touch base because we've got it close on it, unless you think there's something that would contradict it.
If I may,
yes.
I think it's especially since this is your first meeting, there's actually no such thing as a friendly amendment. I think germane and fundamental to an assembly is that everybody hears all the discussion and debate so that when you're actually voting and discussing things, you all have the same information. It's unless there's an urgency to it where you might do something in between meetings, I think it's really important to make sure that as you are considering, unless you're going to send out something again so that the assembly might have it well in advance, it's a little contradictory to standard process.
All right.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Nick, but I just wanted to clarify, our goal in the end is to make sure that we're all safe. And whether or not the resolution looks completely different than this or what have you, I think that we got to be smart and work in the most effective way possible. So for me personally, I'm not looking to hold this, I want to be smart and be as efficient as possible, making sure that everyone's safe.
We are past time, so unless we have a motion to extend, then it's a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Second. All right, we're adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.